The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Today, I'm beyond honored to have as our guest a man whose work I use daily in my clinical practice, and who has made such incredible contributions throughout his life to lifestyle medicine. I'm going to provide a very lengthy bio because it's an incredible story of lifetime achievement. But today's guest is Dr. Caldwell Esselstein, who received his BA from Yale University and his medical degree from Western Reserve University. In 1956, pulling the number six oar as a member of the victorious United States rowing team, he was awarded a gold medal at the Olympic Games. He was trained as a surgeon at the Cleveland Clinic and at St. George's Hospital in London. In 1968, as an Army surgeon in Vietnam, he was awarded the Bronze Star. Dr. Esselstein has been associated with the Cleveland Clinic since 1968. During that time, he has served as president of the staff and as member of the Board of Governors. He chaired the clinic's breast cancer task force and headed its section of thyroid and parathyroid surgery. He's a fellow of the American College of Cardiology. In 1991, Dr. Esselstein served as president of the American Association of Endocrine Surgeons. That same year, he organized the first national conference on the elimination of coronary artery disease, which was held in Tucson, Arizona. In 1997, he chaired a follow-up conference, the Summit on Cholesterol and Coronary Disease, which brought together more than 500 physicians and healthcare workers in Lake Buena Vista, Florida. In April 2005, Dr. Esselstein became the first recipient of the Benjamin Spock Award for Compassion in Medicine. He received the Distinguished Alumnus Award from the Cleveland Clinic Alumni Association in 2009. In September 2010, he received the Greater Cleveland Sports Hall of Fame Award. Dr. Esselstein received the 2013 Deerfield Academy Alumni Association Heritage Award in recognition of outstanding achievement and service, and the 2013 Yale University George H.W. Bush Lifetime of Leadership Award. Dr. Esselstein has also received the 2015 Plantrician Project Luminary Award, the Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine 2016 Distinguished Alumni Award, and the American College of Lifestyle Medicine 2016 Lifetime Achievement Award. His scientific publications number over 150. The Best Doctors in America, 1994 to 1995, published by Woodard and White, cites Dr. Esselstein's surgical expertise in the categories of endocrine and breast disease. In 1995, he published his benchmark long-term nutritional research arresting and reversing coronary artery disease in severely ill patients. That same study was updated at 12 years and reviewed beyond 20 years in his book, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease, making it one of the longest longitudinal studies of its type. In July of 2014, he reported the experience of 198 participants seriously ill with cardiovascular disease. During 3.7 years of follow-up, of the 89% adherent to the program, 99.4% avoided further major cardiac events. Dr. Esselstein and his wife, Anne, have followed a plant-based diet since 1984. Dr. Esselstein presents directly the Cardiovascular Prevention and Reversal Program at the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. The Esselsteins have 4 children and 10 grandchildren. Dr. Esselstein, thank you so much for being on our podcast today.
Thank you for those kind words, Sharon.
Yeah, you have had an incredibly illustrious career. I want to start by asking, you know, every life has so many interesting twists and turns. And you started trained as a surgeon. How did your career veer into cardiac reversal?
Well, it was by 1979 and 80, I was beginning to become a little bit disillusioned or disenchanted with the fact that no matter how many women I was doing breast cancer surgery for, I was doing absolutely nothing for the next unsuspecting victim. And that really led me to a sort of a global research, and it was quite characteristic to see that there were multiple other cultures where breast cancer rates were 30 and 40 times less frequent than in the United States. And if you looked at breast cancer rates in rural Japan in the late 1950s, breast cancer was very infrequently identified. And yet, as soon as the Japanese women would migrate to the United States, by the second and third generation, still pure Japanese American, they now had the same rate of breast cancer as their Caucasian counterpart. So at this time, same time, it was apparent that when you looked at prostate cancer in Japan in 1958, in the entire nation of Japan, how many autopsy-proven deaths were there from cancer of the prostate? 18 in the entire nation by 1978. 20 years later, they were up to 137, which still pales in comparison to the 28,000 men who will die this year in this country from prostate cancer. So it really became impressive to me that maybe there would be more bang for the buck if we looked at cardiovascular disease, because there were multiple cultures where cardiovascular disease was and has been virtually non-existent because they're thriving on whole food, plant-based nutrition. And so it really came to me that if I could do a study where we could show that you could halt and reverse heart disease, then if people began to eat in this country to save their heart, at the same time, they would markedly diminishing the likelihood of developing the common Western cancers of breast, prostate, or colon. So that's kind of the background of where I was still doing. I was halfway through my surgical career, so I still had all my surgical obligations, which is why this first study was rather small. But even though it was small, it was provocative because it clearly showed that in those patients who were compliant, who were seriously ill with heart disease, not only could we halt disease progression, but we often saw absolutely striking examples of heart disease reversal.
Which is absolutely stunning. One tool that, you know, we're increasingly using in our medical practice, both in internal medicine and as well as I think a lot of prevention programs in cardiology, is now we can look at coronary arterial calcium CTs, which quantitate cholesterol buildup. So we're seeing cholesterol at a subclinical stage. And when I see subclinical disease, for me, it's a great opportunity to talk to people about slowing progression. And the number one question I get asked is, can I reverse what's already built up? And your work is something that, you know, I use a lot in my clinical practice because it speaks to that. So I want to get a little bit more into, first of all, the studies that you've done explaining your work in a little more detail. And then, of course, the specifics around the plant-based diet, because that term is broad, and I want to speak to the specifics that have helped your patients prevent and reverse disease.
Let me say a word or two first, if I can, about calcium score.
Yeah.
I kind of went to school on calcium score, oh gosh, a number of years ago, when I learned from Dr. William Castelli. Now, Castelli was for 30 years the director of the world-famous Framingham Heart Study outside of Boston. And Castelli said that when a physician orders a calcium score, it'll give you two pieces of information. One, if the patient has calcium, then obviously that is somebody who has coronary artery disease because they have plaque, which has now received some deposition of calcium. And you can see this on the film. Now, the other piece of information he said it provides you with, but you don't see it. And that is that patient also will have some non-calcified inflamed plaque, which he said are the ones that tend to be somewhat more dangerous. But he said, let's take the example of somebody who has a calcium score of 440, and somehow they absolutely get it right. And over the next year, they're completely committed to whole food plant-based nutrition, which is the greatest anti-inflammatory agent we have. And he said, now at the end of the year, that patient gets another calcium score, and it's no longer 440, it's now 550. But the patient, he said, is much, much healthier, because what has happened during that year that the patient was consuming whole food plant-based nutrition and losing the inflammation in those previously non-calcified inflamed plaque, it is as though the body would like to get in on the act and will deposit some calcium in those previously non-calcified inflamed plaque to hasten along the quelling of that inflammation. So that it can be very misleading to patients and to many physicians, for that matter, where they think that if the calcium score is going up under those particular set of circumstances, they think the patient is getting worse, but in actual fact, they're much better off.
That, I really appreciate you making that point, because that is something that we frequently see, that there is still some progression, but putting it in the context of the non-calcified inflamed parts getting calcified is really helpful to interpret those results.
Well, especially it's also important to the patient, so they know they're concerned initially about a calcium score, and you tell them their calcium score is going up, they're panicked. And you've got to explain this in detail and reassure them. What has happened is that the dangerous ones, which were not visible, have now been put to rest.
And it also brings up the question of, and this is really, maybe if you could explain this to our audience, the role of inflammation and why it's so important that we're targeting inflammation in this reversal and prevention process.
Well, I think that the data increasingly show that perhaps one of the functions that is perhaps misguidedly attributed to the benefits from the statins. The benefit is not just lowering the cholesterol. The benefit may be anti-inflammation, because 90% of heart attacks seem to occur when the blockage or the plaque has a cap which is inflamed by the metalloproteinases that come from the foam cell. And these metalloproteinases tend to erode the thickness of the cap over the plaque. And with the passage of a blood flow rushing by this attenuated, thinned out cap, it may tear it. And because of that inflammation of having it make it so thin. And once you have torn the cap over the plaque, or it has ruptured, that's a seminal moment, because now we have the extravasation, or the oozing out of, if you will, of plaque content into the flowing blood, which tends to activate our clotting factors like platelets. And in a matter of moments after the ruptured plaque, there begins to be a formation of a clot, thrombosis at that site. And the clot is in and of itself self-propagating. So in a matter of further moments, we now have a clot which can embrace and encompass and fulfill the entire diameter of that blood vessel, totally blocking it, so that all the downstream heart muscle is suddenly deprived of all oxygen and nutrients. And that's 90% of your heart attacks.
Absolutely. And when a person starts a plant-based diet, by reducing that inflammation, how does that outcome change?
Well, what seems to happen is several things. In the plaques that are young and soft, and are made up of, let's say, inflammation, fat, and cholesterol, the body has an amazing capacity to reverse those elements. It is the older plaque that is made up of scar, fibrosis, and calcification, where even though you have a rather profound result with plant-based nutrition, the components of that plaque are rather stubborn and will not go away. But nevertheless, even those patients can get back to full activity without restriction. And I can talk about that in a minute if you like. Maybe I'll do that. We're on the roll right now, because what we noticed, 15, 18 years ago, when we took a patient who had heart disease and we did a PET scan, and let's say the PET scan lights up the muscle as orange or yellow if it's getting well perfused, but there may be a patch of heart muscle that is green where the perfusion of blood is quite poor. Well, we found that when I counseled the patient on the day that they had that initial scan containing the area that was green that was poorly perfused, if we counseled the patient and they got it right, and we brought them back in as early as 3 weeks, we would see that that area that was previously poorly perfused was now orange or yellow. It was fully perfused in 3 weeks. And then it was kind of interesting how it coincided as these patients would lose their chest pain or angina. And it made no sense to me that in these patients who often were in their 60s, you can't wash out a blockage or a plaque in 3 weeks. How was it that they were getting reperfused? And I happen to have, and I don't have it, we're not able to show it because we're not showing slides. I have a slide that shows a heart with absolutely no muscle. It is just totally constructed by all of its blood vessels. You have the three main artery, coronary arteries, the right coronary artery, the left anterior descending, the circumflex, and it is also showing where they all go. They all dive into the heart muscle, so that every single one of these arteries is now, these major arteries, has bifurcated and become smaller and engaged itself in this wonderful cascade of intertwining. Literally on this slide, you can see these hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of vessels, small vessels, intramuscular. So it was about a decade ago that I asked the Cleveland Clinic cardiovascular pathologist, Rodriguez, I said, how often, because he dissects 200 hearts a year from the deceased. How often, Rod, do you ever see garden variety coronary artery disease or plaque blocking an artery once it has dived into the muscle, once it's intramuscular? His answer? Never. Now I had the answer. Why were these patients getting better? Because what happens is when we first see those patients, their endothelial cells are an absolute train wreck. They are hardly making any nitric oxide, the strongest blood vessel dilator we have. And now your endothelial cells have become your enemy. They are making two molecules, endothelin and thromboxane, which are vasoconstrictive. So here we have, when we see those patients, they have very little vasodilator and their vessels are all being vasoconstricted by endothelin and thromboxane. So as soon as they begin beginning to eat whole food, plant-based nutrition, their endothelial cells begin to recover, make more nitric oxide, the great vessel dilator, and they stop making the vasoconstrictor, endothelin and thromboxane, which explains how it is that this entire intramuscular cascade, which has been crimped, narrowed, and pinched, suddenly dilates. And if you recall in physics, Poisson's law, a throw through the hollow viscous is related to the fourth power of the radius translation. Tiny increase in diameter in every one of those thousands of intramuscular vessels, huge increase in blood flow.
Amazing. And the specific diet that you put people on for the 3 weeks where you saw this change, can you speak more about the components of the diet?
Well, yeah, the first component would be what we take away from them so that they are no longer injuring their endothelial cells. Because I think the message that I'd like to deliver today is that we really stay away from getting too fancy with our scientific terms. Coronary artery disease, cardiovascular disease, is a disease of endothelial cell injury and the lack of nitric oxide, which has these remarkable functions. Let's take a moment and describe what the functions of nitric oxide are. One, it's a gas which has the power to keep all the cellular elements within our bloodstream flowing smoothly like Teflon rather than Velcro. It keeps things from getting sticky. Number two, nitric oxide is the strongest blood vessel dilator in the body. When you climb stairs, the arteries to your heart, the arteries to your legs, they widen, they dilate. That's nitric oxide. Number three, nitric oxide will protect the wall of the artery from becoming thickened, stiff, or inflamed, protect you from getting high blood pressure, hypertension. Number four, now here's the absolute key. A safe and normal amount of nitric oxide will protect us all from ever developing any blockages or plaques. So literally, everybody on the planet Earth who has cardiovascular disease, whether they're from London, Berlin, Chicago, New York, or Atlanta, if they have cardiovascular disease, it is because by now, in the previous decades, they had so trashed, injured, compromised, and turned their endothelial system into a train wreck that they no longer have enough nitric oxide to protect themselves from making blockages and plaque. However, the good news is that this is not a malignancy. This is a benign foodborne illness. Once you can get patients to understand that never, never, never again are they to pass through their lips a single morsel that is going to further injure an already train wrecked endothelium, then the endothelium begins to recover, make enough nitric oxide so we can not only halt disease progression, but we can often see significant elements of disease reversal. Now, what are the foods that every time they pass your lips, you injure the endothelial cells? They are, one, any drop of oil, olive oil, corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, coconut oil, palm oil, oil in a cracker, oil in a piece of bread, oil in a salad dressing. We stop their oil. We stop that component of endothelial injury. Number two, nothing with a mother or a face. No meat, fish, chicken, fowl, turkey, or eggs. Number three, no dairy, no milk, cream, butter, cheese, ice cream, or yogurt. Number three, let's make it number four. We don't want sugary drinks, diet colas, Pepsi, or Coke. And I don't like sugar because sugar injures endothelial cells. We want to avoid sugary foods like cakes, pies, cookies, stevia, agave, excesses of maple syrup, molasses, and honey. I do not like nuts. I don't like nut butters, cashew sauce, or avocado. And finally, eliminate coffee with caffeine. Decaf, yes, but coffee with caffeine will injure endothelial cells.
And I want to visit some of the things you mentioned, because some of the foods you mentioned are plant-based, but still on the nitric oxide list, the no list for nitric oxide. I want to circle back and kind of ask the question, what is it about those plant-based foods that still make them on the no list?
Well, like what?
You mentioned nuts. You mentioned avocado, even olive oil. Can you speak more about what are the components that are still harmful for nitric oxide?
Yeah, in peanuts, I don't like the saturated fat. Same thing in the avocado. The oils, specifically, whether it's, I mentioned olive oil, corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil, coconut oil, palm oil, oil in a cracker, oil in a piece of bread. Don't like the oils because the oils have been shown to injure endothelial cells. I mean, as a matter of fact, like I wrote a paper in 2019 that was published in the International Journal of Disease Reversal and Prevention. And the title of the paper was, Is Oil Healthy? And I go through the animal studies and I go through the human studies indicating how those oils injure the endothelial cell.
So it's really the saturated fat component of the plant-based foods that is making them harmful.
That may not be all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But certainly that would be a component of it. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
The reason I'm a little bit touchy about nuts, and there's a lot of literature out there that talks about comparing nuts to some other type of food. And those studies are always carefully set up, or many of them are, by people who have been funded by the nut companies. And I am a total believer in the late Arnold Wellman, who was an editor of the New England Journal. And he was extremely of the mind that anybody who writes a paper where they're funded by the organization, it is an unacceptable conflict.
Yes, absolutely. And the Mediterranean diet is one that is often kind of the prototypic diet recommended when people are working on heart disease prevention. And this also varies from the Mediterranean diet. And as you mentioned, absolutely no meat and dairy. Mediterranean diet is high in olive oil. Can you speak to kind of difference in outcomes of Mediterranean diet versus?
Yeah, it never works. It's impossible.
Okay.
So let's keep it. Let's call it like it is. There has never, ever been a study of patients seriously ill with heart disease who were fed a Mediterranean diet where they halted disease progression and showed clear evidence of disease reversal. Right. The Mediterranean diet, I was asked to, I guess it was back in 2013 when the PREDIMED study came out from Spain, you recall, had 5,000 patients, Mediterranean diet with oil, Mediterranean diet with nuts, and then the low-fat diet. And to become a member of the study, it was a requirement that there not be any evidence of cardiovascular disease in the people who were included. And I was called by a New York Times reporter about the time that study came out and said, Dr. Esselstyn, would you have a thought? What are your thoughts about this study that says that the you can stop heart disease with the Mediterranean diet? And I said, well, let's talk about this for a minute. First of all, the study components or participants, it was a requirement they not have cardiovascular disease at the time. And yet every single of the one of those three groups at the time of follow-up in 5 years, scores of patients in every one of those three groups developed major cardiac events, heart attack, stroke, and death. I think the title that they have is wrong. It should be that the Mediterranean diet creates vascular disease. And recently, there was a wonderful study just completed by my good friend Neil Barnard of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, comparing the Mediterranean diet with a standard diet. And for, I think it was for 16 weeks. And then they switched. The group that formerly was eating Mediterranean switched now to, they were comparing Mediterranean with plant-based, yeah. Plant-based just absolutely blew it away. No comparison. No, the Mediterranean diet is just sort of a cop-out on the lips of those who don't understand, really, I think, the full science of what is happening. And because Mediterranean diet, yes, back in the island of Crete, maybe 80 years ago, when they weren't eating meat and dairy and oil and some, and they had all these wonderful green leafy vegetables and fruit, heart disease was not an issue.
Yeah, I know that. That's great. And you mentioned the foods that are kind of you shouldn't eat to protect the nitric oxide. What foods should a person eat?
Yeah, all these marvelous whole grains, WHOLE, whole grains for your cereal, bread, pasta, bowls, and bagels. And those whole grains will include things like brown rice, bulgur wheat, barley, rye, buckwheat, farro, quinoa. And I think it's also important that patients understand that they can eat 101 different types of legumes, lentils, and beans, all these marvelous red, yellow, and green leafy vegetables, white potatoes, sweet potatoes, and some fruit. And you've got an absolutely glorious nutritional array of wonderful phytonutrients that are going to be nourishing.
Yeah, that's great. And Dr. Esselstein, with the time we have left, you know, you have such a broad career that has spanned so much work in this area. I wanted to get your thoughts and opinion of where we should go as a country. Like, what's next, or what's your vision, and what advice do you have for us to get to that goal?
Well, let me finish one other food that I think is so important, if I may, and then remind me of what that question is, please. One of the things that I think is so important, so because I embrace it and I want my patients to embrace it, as wonderful as nitric oxide is, the endothelial production of nitric oxide is age dependent. Yeah, so you never heard of a boy or girl at age 8 have a heart attack. They've got nitric oxide coming out of their ears, but by the time you're beautifully healthy and you're age 50, you now have 50% of the endothelial production of nitric oxide you had when you were 25. And by the time you're 80, you've lost 70% of that. So we tried to devise an adjunct to our program 10 years ago that takes advantage of a way of trying to stimulate further our endothelial production of nitric oxide, and at the same time, take advantage of the newer research in the last 12 years that shows that mankind has an alternate pathway for producing nitric oxide. So let me just share that, if I can, with you for a moment.
Yes, please.
Therefore, I want our patients to chew, not smoothies or juicing, to chew 6 times a day a green leafy vegetable that is roughly half the size of their fist. And this is after it has first been boiled in water 5.5 to 6 minutes so it's nice and tender. Then we want them to anoint it with several drops of a delightful rice or balsamic vinegar. Why? Because research has shown us that the acetic acid from those vinegars will restore the nitric oxide synthase enzyme contained within the endothelial cell that is responsible for making nitric oxide. And therefore, they're going to chew this alongside their breakfast cereal, again as a mid-morning snack, again with their luncheon sandwich, that's 3, mid-afternoon, 4, dinner time, 5, and of course, I adore it when you have that evening snack of arugula and kale. Now, the second benefit that comes from doing this is that you restore the capacity of your bone marrow to once again make the endothelial progenitor cell. What do? The endothelial progenitor cells replace our senescent, injured, worn-out endothelial cells. Now, the third benefit from chewing the greens, and this is the most important of all, when you're chewing a green leafy vegetable, you are chewing a green nitrate. As you chew the green nitrate, it is going to mix with the facultative anaerobic bacteria that reside in the crypts and grooves of your tongue. Those bacteria are going to mix with and reduce the nitrate that you are chewing to a nitrite. When you swallow the nitrite, it is now your own gastric acid, which further reduces the nitrite to more nitric oxide. So, think about it for a minute. with no added expense, with no hideous side effects. All day long, dawn to dusk, you are absolutely restoring nitric oxide, the very molecule, the deficiency of which has given you this disease in the first place. Now, there's a caveat to this. Toothpaste with fluoride, public drinking water with fluoride, mouthwash will injure the beneficial bacteria in your mouth. And we do not like antacids because antacids will reduce your gastric acidity and you will be unable to reduce the nitrite to more nitric oxide. So what are the green leafy vegetables that I'm talking about? They are bok choy, Swiss chard, kale, collards, collard green, beet greens, mustard green, turnip greens, napa cabbage, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, cilantro, parsley, spinach, arugula, and asparagus. And the top six are kale, Swiss chard, spinach, arugula, beet greens, and beets. And look what it does for your memory.
Well, you are living proof that it worked. That's fabulous. Do you find that the participants in your programs and in your clinical studies have a hard time incorporating six servings a day?
You know, it may be challenging at first, but here's what makes it easier. If you are willing to spend, because we spend about, when we counsel patients on our counseling day, it's 5.5 hours. I know very few physicians that spend 5.5 hours counseling their patients. And they're going to learn the science. So, and nobody leaves the door of our, or nowadays it's the virtual meeting, without an understanding of the relationship of the endothelial cell to nitric oxide. When they now fully embrace the fact that the only reason they're sitting there having had that heart attack is because they were eating a diet that so destroyed their endothelial cells, they brought upon themselves this nitric oxide deficiency, which allowed them to have a heart attack. Now, why would anybody who's heard this science time and time for several hours with a brain in their head ever dare come up to me and say, Dr. Esselstyn, that was fascinating, but Lois and I have been married for 35 years and this, in a couple of weekends from now, I'm going to have a party and boy, am I going to destroy my last few remaining endothelial cells. Not going to happen. They embrace the fact that they themselves have become the locus of control to absolutely annihilate their disease.
Dr. Esselstyn, I want to thank you so much for your time. And more than that, I want to thank you for the lifetime of work you've done, advancing the understanding to help all of us kind of approach this disease differently, not just in prevention, but the actual reversal. I think it's just so pioneering when I think back, you know, of how hard it must have been back in 1979 to conceptualize this, to have the credibility to be able to conduct this type of work and to be really one of the leaders in getting us to where we even are now, even though we have more work to do. I have such gratitude and respect for all the work that you've done.
Sharon, listen, this has been an absolute honor and privilege. It's so nice to rub elbows with another Yale graduate who has this passion for really turning it around. Because what's so exciting is if you can get patients and the public to begin to recognize the power of plant-based nutrition, it's not only heart disease, which you're going to eradicate. But what you're going to really get rid of is hypertension, type 2 diabetes, strokes, vascular dementia, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, and rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, multiple sclerosis, allergies, and asthma. We've never had in medicine before such a powerful tool in our toolbox. So I kind of envy you in a way going forward with your, at the beginning of this career, when I'm confident that you're going to see this evolution.
Yeah, it will be exciting to see. Well, we kind of walk on the shoulder of giants. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by Emory Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website, emoryhealthcare.org/livewell. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.